Tampa Bay's TAN Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
How long we've known each other, Ken? I ever break a promise to you? I will put you in the driver's seat at Le Mans. You just shut your mouth and let me do my thing. All right.
Come here. Morning, Shelby.
Morning, Molly.
Up yours.
I'll go to hell.
That's it, folks. Ferrari wins the 24 Hours of Le Mans for the fifth consecutive year.
Mr. Ford, Ferrari has a message for you, sir.
What did he say?
He said Ford makes ugly little cars in ugly factories. And he called you fat, sir.
We're gonna bury Ferrari at Le Mans.
So the great Carroll Shelby
is gonna build a car to beat Ferrari with a Ford.
Correct.
And how long did you tell them you needed? 200 or 300 years?
90 days.
Ford hates guys like us because we're different.
Well, we heard he's difficult.
Ken? No, Ken's a puppy dog.
If there's a problem, the computer will find it.
Get some Scotch tape and a ball of wool.
What are they doing?
Making your car faster.
That's more like it!
10 miles is not a Ford, man.
We're on the verge of something, and now you tell me that I can't have the best man in the world behind the wheel?
Give me one reason why I don't fire everyone starting with you.
Well, sir,
we're lighter, we're faster. And that don't work, we're nastier.
Go ahead, girl. Go to war.
What a plan.
It's high risk.
I thought the whole point was to win the damned race.
If this were a beauty pageant, we just lost.
Looks aren't everything.
Hi, this is Jay Leno, and you're listening to my favorite, Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google Town Talk 1340.com, and you can see, yes, really see me live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you miss any of our 711 shows, 711. Hey, shows, tune in to visit NostalgicRadioCars.com. Good evening, Bobby.
Howdy, howdy.
Wow, well, this is our 14th anniversary show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, and it's like the old crew's back. Me and Bobby's in the driver's seat.
Happy to be here.
Happy to be here. Wow, good to see you, bub. So here we go. We got an exciting show for you tonight. We got a special guest coming on.
First question.
Do you know how to drive a radio station?
Yes, yes, yeah. Well, I'm sure you do. You're in the driver's seat. You are manhandling this thing right now. So super, 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 super. Okay, so normally what I do in the first part of the show a little bit is I talk a little bit about some of the events or things that I've got going on. So a couple things. One, over the weekend they had a Mopar show over in Ocala. And I ran over there to kind of snoop around. I had a few Mopar things on my own I needed to sell and trade and wheel and deal. Excuse me. And then there was some stuff that I was looking for one of my customers who's got a B-body, 68 B-body project. And so I was trying to kind of horse trade to get rid of some stuff that I got, to get some stuff that he needs so I could sell him something. So at the end of the day, I actually wound up with some coin. That was the plan. Didn't quite work out that way. But nonetheless, I saw some old friends. Jim Drain was there, and big shout out to Jim. He's a big Mopar guy out of St. Pete. Mostly in the 66, 67 B-bodies, but he's out there. Shout out to my friends over at Roosters. They weren't there, but we drove past their place today. And then who else was did we bump into today? Oh, yeah, we went by Wayne and... help me out here. Todd's place. When we're looking at some cars now. Todd had a real interesting car over there, which you don't see very often. It's a rare. It is one of the early Ford Tasca altered AFX Mustangs. And this car was probably, I'm going to say, much of the original cars there, including the original motor, which was a Holman and Moody supplied car. Now, what I did know. I thought, so Ford, before the days of CarCraft, Ford had kind of like, everybody uses the term skunk work. Chevrolet had a skunk's work, Mopar had a skunk's work, Ford had a skunk's work, Shelby had a skunk's work, Holman and Moody had a skunk's work. And I don't really, you know, the term is kind of loosely used, and it's basically saying, hey, we are, this is kind of like our little underground backdoor shade tree, nobody's supposed to know about it, you know, little area where we come up with some really cool badass engine technology and stuff like that, and then we slide it surreptitiously to the racing teams. So anyway, so they had this, I mean, it was a real live, the holy grail of Ford Motors, the Ford 427 single overhead cam. Bobby got to see one for the first time. Well, maybe not the first time, but the first time up and close and personal. And that was kind of cool. So we were kind of talking about that. And Wayne was giving us the details on that particular car and how the car was built. And what I did not know, I thought the car was actually built by Tasca. But apparently the cars were given to as rolling chassis, Hyper 289 Hypo K-code cars, to Holman and Moody. And then Holman and Moody performed the alterations on the car. So they moved the rear end back, or forwards actually, closer to the back seat, and then did some other modifications, put the drive shaft in there, a few things like that, and then, of course, the suspension was modified. And then over a couple of years, they evolved. Now, a few years ago, we had Al Joniak on here, and he had a 65 AFX car. It was called the Batmobile. And then I don't remember if he wrecked that car or that car. Well, maybe it was the one after. But he had one of those, and, of course, Dick Brannon had one, and then I think... can't think of who the Georgia Shaker was. He had one. So there was probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 of those cars. And they just basically mopped up back in the day. And so it was really cool to see that. But one of the other interesting cars in this collection, and it's not really open to the public, but I appreciate people that have the means and then can put together these private collections, particularly if they have very, very interesting, nostalgic, and historic cars. One of the cars he had there, well, I think, well, what was it, Bobby? A 1909 Cadillac, right?
Yes, yes.
And we got on the subject about talking about, because we were looking at one of the Hemi race cars that we had there. He's got a 71, 72 Challenger race car. And when he popped the hood, it had twin ignition in it. And I've seen that before, but I never really paid much attention to it. Now, twin ignition, there's a reason for that, you know, obviously. And, of course, today, twin ignition is common. But we walked over and looked at this 1909 Cadillac, and twin ignition was, you know, like, everybody thinks that all this technology and everything we have today is all, you know, overhead cams and five valves per cylinder and twin ignition and this and that and all this other kind of stuff, that this is all new technology. No, it's not. It's been around, actually, for over 100 and some odd years. It's just that today, the process, they reverted back to it. It's kind of like you always bounce around. Let's try this. If this doesn't work, let's go back to that. You know, so you go back to the drawing board, as they say. Nonetheless, Cadillac experimented with this, and I'm not saying they're the first one that had twin ignition, but this particular four-cylinder Cadillac motor actually was twin ignition. It also had electric start, and the electric start was designed by a gentleman by the name of Kettering. Is it Allen?
It's Paul from Clearwater.
Paul from Clearwater. All right. Well, we don't normally take calls, but we'll go ahead and take a Paul.
Wishing us well.
Wishing us well. Okay, Paul from Clearwater, thank you. At any rate, so Kettering, and then I found out that Kettering actually developed a number of other interesting innovations. Air conditioning was one of them. What else did he invent? There was...
Well, it was Freon, yeah, specifically.
Freon. Yes, that. And then there was one more thing that was kind of significant. And but anyway, so I'm going to read up to... Unfortunately, these people aren't here, but maybe I'll find a historian that knows a lot about Kettering. Because, you know, he was kind of like partial to high-end cars, and that's one of the reasons why he went and approached Henry Leland, who used to work for Ford Motor Company, who went out and decided to... Or the other way around. And Leland kind of wanted to do a high-end car, and Henry Ford just wanted to do... Do your basic Model T, as long as it was any color, or any color as long as it was black, you know, that type of thing. He had a real conservative philosophy, and I get that. You know, he wanted the car so that the average guy could afford it, and, you know, it did well for him. I mean, he was a worldwide company, and, you know, him and Harvey Firestone and who was that other guy, Thomas Edison? Those were the guys. Those were the men back in the day. I mean, let alone, never mind the other industrialists, the Carnegies and people like that. And then the financial guys at J.W. Morgan's and so on. But nonetheless, so that was kind of interesting. And then I think that pretty much sums it up. Oh, yeah. Bobby, you got a chance to sit in that car, so it was kind of really cool. I mean, you sit there in a steering wheel, and you actually adjust the spark from there. And now, I've driven Model A one time, and I had a little trouble with it because there's an art to it. If you're not used to it, you know. But keep in mind, that was a daily thing back in those days. You know, to hand crank a car and to adjust the spark as you go down. In fact, what was interesting on that Cadillac too was the on a cold day, how you started the car, and that was they look like little thimbles on top of the cylinders, and you fill those with gas, and that's all the gas you had to put, and then basically, boom, it would start right up. Now, they used to do something very similar to that. They had little gas starters on diesel tractors. Okay, so back in the day, that's kind of how they started. They had a little gas motor. You fire that up, and then that's what they used to start the diesel.
Caterpillar construction equipment using that up for a while, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so we have a very special guest. We're going to get to our guest here in a few minutes, and we'll see where this goes. But, all right, so we did the Mopar show, talked a little bit about the collector car. Another thing I did this weekend. Last-minute crash course, I had to do an appraisal on a 1965 Corvette tanker. Okay, now you're going, what's a tanker? Well, the tanker was an option that they offered. It's called NO3, code NO3, just like you have, you know, a Copo car, or you have a Z28 code, or you have a, an L72 or L79 or something like that. Okay, well, there's a code called NO3, and that was a tanker option, a 36-gallon tanker. And as the story goes, Zordon Dundoff he wanted to make the 63 Corvette special. He wanted the mid-year Corvette 63-67 when they came out with independent rear suspension. Now, keep in mind, Zora Dundoff raced Porsches and other cars back in the day. So he was really into the handling, let alone the performance and stuff like that. Well, the mid-year is the first year for independent rear suspension. The 64 and 65, 63 and 4s are drum brake cars. 65, they had disc brakes all the way around, all four corners. Anyway, so they wanted to get this cars involved in racing, so they came up with the Z06 package, okay? Remember, NO3 or Z06. And that basically gave you a different suspension, different transmission, different rear end, and a couple other little goodies, okay? And a special motor. And a lot of people think it was the 365 horse fuel injected, but you could actually get a 340. So it was really more about the package. The engine was a separate deal. Anyway, so as I'm doing this research on the tanker cars, okay, so you could have had, everybody thinks that all the tankers, which the original plan was, is to have that car with a larger gas tank so it could run long range on endurance races, okay? And so everybody thinks that, and rightfully so. I mean, all the tanks were built in 1963. The ones that I've all seen, the ones I researched, all dated 63. So what they did is they built 150, 200 tanks. They were using them up as they went along. They built like 63 and 66, 40-something and 64, 41 exactly in 65, and maybe another 30 something in 66, and then in 67, whatever the balance was. And so they used up most of the tankers. But then the layperson could actually go in there at the dealership and buy a tanker if he wanted to convert his car. There was a whole bunch of pieces, a big tank, the rear panel was out of there. It was a fiberglass panel. There's a neck that went from the back, a filler neck that went to the tank and the behind the seat. The bulkhead was a little bit different, essentially the same car, but the trim and everything. So in doing my research, I am almost a tanker expert now. Okay, so I know about the tankers. And I don't know all the exact numbers, but this car happened to be a small block car. It was ordered originally by a U.S. serviceman with the intentions of taking it over to Europe, where he was stationed in Holland, I might add. So the speedometer cluster was actually in kilometers, okay? The Corvettes are 160, so this was at 240, okay, that's what it said, what it was registered, and it had 23,000 original kilometers, which translates, if you do the math, divided by 1.6, is 14,000 and some odd miles. Okay, so all the other tankers that I researched and found that were advertised had been restored, reconditioned, had the mileage from whatever, but they had documentation, but not to the extent that this one did. I mean, this one had the original owner's manual, build sheet, and a couple other little goodies. But it was ordered as a small block, a 300 horse. The base motor back in 65 was a 300 horse 327. It was also a two-speed Powerglide, but it did have power windows. It did have electric seats. It did have tinted windows. It did have tilt telescopic. It had the rare teak wood wheel option. Obviously a 336 posi in it, not a short gear, but a tall gear. So my guess is this guy, you know, fuel was expensive back in the day in Europe, so he wanted something somewhat economical. My guess is he was going to drive it, or the intention was to drive it long distances. So, you know, and then my guess is he was probably going to drive it between bases, so because fuel is cheaper if you're on the base. So the long range tank makes sense. The small motor makes sense because it wasn't real fuelish, and the fact that it had a tall gear in it also made sense. I was planning, you know, if you could run 200 kilometers, which is 120 miles an hour on the Autobahn, which is, you know, maybe 4,500 RPMs in a Corvette back in the day, it all made sense. So when you start putting the pieces of the puzzle together, plus the documentation, now you just have to kind of only envision what would have been like when I was at the dealership and I ordered that car in 1965. By the way, the retail price on that car, the base price on the Corvette was $4,200. By the time you got the option, it was $5,700. Not bad. Anyway, all right, we're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to have our guest on. In the meantime, I'm going to wish myself a happy anniversary. Bobby, too. 14 years. And don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. In fact, don't call us. We'll call you. Here's a little Sugarloaf.
Call us, child, we'll call you. I said, you got my number? He said, yeah, I got when you walk in the door. Don't call us.
Let's go. Oh, wait a minute. There's something missing. The engine.
The hunt for history is on.
Steve Jobs, BMW Z8. Always thought that this would be a cool car to own.
And the stash is on the scent.
When somebody calls you and says they have a Porsche 4 cam, gotta go take a look at it.
Whoa. Of some phenomenal forgotten gems.
This is the key to the puzzle. It's like finding the Holy Grail.
Dot, dot, dot. The rest is history.
It's awesome.
Chasing classic cars.
So this is the car that started it all, my obsession for weird and unusual cars. You know, I loved cars anyways as a kid. I loved Ferraris. But this car came into my father's shop when I was 16 years old. It came for a little scratch in the fender, and I fell in love with it at 16 years old. Now, normal kids when I was 16 were falling in love with Camaros and Mustangs and stuff, but I fell in love with a Hudson Italia, one of only 25 made, and this is the only remaining totally original one left. I pursued this car from when I was 16 years old, and I bought it when I was 52 years old. And that pursuit over those years, just it was an unbelievable pursuit. And the story was written about that in the New York Times called First Love, and it was written by Donald Osborne. Jim Ostrowski, who owns Essex Television and Crashing Away Productions, read that article on Sunday, called me Monday morning and said, I'd like to do a TV show about you. I thought he was a little off his rocker. But he came up, we talked for about a half an hour in my office, and the rest is history. Chasing Classic Cars was born that day, continues to be one of the top TV shows.
If you love classic cars, then Donald loves you. Hi, it's Donald Osborne, and you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, we're back and you're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I am delighted. This is going to be like a family reunion here. I'm delighted to welcome back to the show my good friend, the one and only Wayne Carini. Wayne, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Robert. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. We've been looking forward to doing this for a long time. I couldn't think of a more fitting time to do it than my anniversary show, so thank you for hanging out with us here for a while.
14 years. Wow, that's something special.
Well, now, when I met you, coincidentally, it was at Amelia Island in 2010 or 11, and I think you had just started Chasing Classic Cars.
Yeah, it could have been. I can't remember. My gosh, it's been so long. I mean, we did 18 seasons of Chasing Classic Cars.
Wow.
And you know, over two, I think it's 218 episodes were viewed in over 100 countries. And my voice is dubbed in 38 languages. So who would ever think that something like this would happen?
Well, I will tell you, you had a tent right behind, you know, when you come around the corner there where they always have the show cars, kind of like on that little green, that putting green up there. And then right behind that, before you walk into where Amelia is, you were there, you had a tent set up, and you had a Karmann Ghia. I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, that Karmann Ghia was something special, but that was just... I think that was season four or five.
Actually. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think that was really cranking along. You know, I've been to every Amelia Island Concours, and I knew you've been to quite a few, but not all of them. And it's one of the most special places in the world for car shows. Bill Warner and his wife Jane have done such a wonderful job in honing that to be one of the best shows in the world. And Haggerty took it over a few years ago and is doing a great job again. So, you know, it's one of my favorite places in the world to go to a car show.
So what have you been up to? What's going on?
Well, you know, we're doing new things. I'm so busy at the shop restoring cars. We have a few that are going to different shows. We have one going to Villa Desk next year. So that's a focal point. We've got Mangusta, another Mangusta that we're doing. I mean, so many cars. But it's really great that we've been able to carry on our, you know, what we've been doing our whole lives and not focus on television as much as what we're doing and, you know, restoring cars. But, you know, I have Chasing Classic Cars is done for the moment anyways. And after 18 seasons of that and traveling 180, 190 days a year, I decided to stop doing that and spend more time with family. So I want to travel about 130, 140 days a year instead of 200 days a year and do some different things. This year might be my last Pebble Beach for a while, but I want to go to Villa d'Este. I want to go to Goodwood. I want to do so many different things that I've been unable to do because of my commitments to Chasing Classic Cars and going to all these different shows in the United States. So, but I love doing things for charities all across the country. I've done so many things for charities, especially autism, over the past few years. That's what's going on. Staying home a little bit. It's next weekend. It's my 40th wedding anniversary, so I love my wife, and I love being home with my family for that. So that's what's going on.
Well, congratulations on the 40 years. I got you beat, though. I'm 41.
Good man.
So, anyway, all right. So, let's talk a little bit about some of the stories. You know, people love to hear stories, barn finds. If you have to reflect a little bit, give us a couple stories that really stand out. Now, I wanted to ask one more thing because you talked about, you know, going to Pebble Beach. You might not go to Pebble Beach next year or after this year, but I know at one point you did an event or did a show over in Dubai. So having gone to Dubai, and now you're talking about Villa d'Este, which is in Italy. They're over in, well, Swiss-Italian border there, I think. Lugano, is that where it is? Have you been to that one before?
Villa d'Este is in Italy.
In Italy, right, yeah.
But so we went to the Concord of Kuwait. So one day my secretary comes in and says, the Prime Minister of Kuwait's on the phone for you.
Huh.
And of course, I go, oh, sure. You know, and I'm figuring it's one of my friends screwing around with me. But it was really a prime minister, and he invited me over to his show. And so we said, you know, we'd like to bring our camera crew. So we did a show about going over to the Kuwaiti Concord. It was an experience unlike any other because the Concord was in the evening. So it started at 7 o'clock in the evening. So we had the whole day. But going and seeing their way of the way they do, you know, they do things was an unbelievable experience. And of course, I'm walking down the street in Kuwait, and all of a sudden, people jamming the, you know, brakes on their car, want to take pictures with me. It was like, what is going on? You know, I had no idea that I was that popular over in that part of the country or the world, and it was a spectacular thing. They had a car show in my honor, and about 200 cars showed up, and they gave me all these gifts. It was unbelievable. I mean, I had no idea, but it was an experience like no other. I'd love to go back and visit them again, but, you know, there's so many places I want to go in the world. You know, we've been to the Isle of Man before, and I want to go back there again. We've been to the Mille and Mille, and I'd like to go back there again. So there's so many events around the world, and we've been focusing so much of the United States over the years with Chasing Classic Cars because the cost of traveling and all that didn't add up to make a good show. So we stayed local. So this year will be my 40th straight year at Pebble. I took a year off. Of course, COVID
right.
Stopped Pebble Beach over 1 year. So last year was my 40th straight, but yet I'll give it up this year because it's 40th year this year because of that 1 year. So it's something special going to Pebble Beach. I went there as a child. 40 years was just straight. I've actually been there about 48 years. I started going there because my aunt and uncle lived on 17 Mile Drive.
Oh, no kidding.
I used to go there as a 13, 14-year-old. And my cousin and I would travel out there and visit our aunt and uncle. So, you know, it was a special place to be in my life. And actually, you know, to go there as a young person and then finally be able to show a car at Pebble Beach was a total other experience in my life. So do you know the 365P Ferrari Luigi Canetti car?
Yes.
Yeah, the Triposti. So I restored that car for Luigi Canetti. I first saw that car when I was a teenager and in Canetti's garage down in Greenwich, Connecticut. And then I ended up restoring the car for him. And then we took it to Pebble Beach. And I drove on the lawn at Pebble Beach, and I placed the car for him, and I was driving it. My best friend was on my right side, and my wife was on my left side. And that was it. I mean, the car that I dreamt of as a kid, restoring that car and then showing it at Pebble Beach with my two greatest friends in the world, that was quite an experience.
That's the white car with the three seats in it we're talking about now, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. That car, when my wife and I got married and we had a garage in my house in Portland, that car sat there because Luigi, after we restored it, had no place to put it. He was traveling so much, so I stored it for him. And my daughters, when they were born, would sit in car seats on either side of me, and we'd drive around town in that car. So.
Oh, that car is extremely special to you then.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
So memorable experiences like that. I wanted to jump back on the Kuwait concourse. What were some of the cars like? Are they into, the perception is they're into strictly supercars, but then I was reading an article that many of them are into vintage collectible cars. So why don't you shed some light on that?
So the Kuwaiti Concours, it's a five-day event, and they have Ferraris one day, Lamborghinis the other. I mean, they had supercars, and then they had a concours of classic cars. And so every day was a different experience. It was unbelievable, and of course it was held in the evening because of the heat. So they held it at 7 o'clock at night, with all lights and stuff. It was an unbelievable experience. But to get to know the people of Kuwait and to see what they, you know, their type of living was the best experience to me. There was a lot of people there from Germany, from Japan, showing cars. Italy, of course, but so many people from different countries, and seeing their type of living was really the best experience I had.
Isle of Man, what was the Isle of Man like?
Isle of Man was really great. So that was when I was young. We went over there, but I want to go with my grandson. I just think the Isle of Man is probably the most exciting and dangerous thing to do in life. I mean, you can jump off a cliff, you can do so many things, but when Valentino Rossi goes to Isle of Man, and this is one of the best Grand Prix drivers or riders in the world, and he goes there once and he says, "You guys are nuts." I think that's the best thing. So we have a new TV network called Speed Vision, which I'm a part of. I'm one of the founding members of Speed Vision. The new Speed Vision, and we just signed a deal with Isle of Man to do a lot of different shows about the Isle of Man, so that's very exciting.
Well, now, Isle of Man, when I think of it, I think in terms of motorcycle racing. Was there auto?
Well, that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. So Isle of Man is one of the most dangerous motorcycle races in the world. I think it's 18 miles around is the track around the island, and these guys go so fast. There's trees, they're coming next to the trees and some walls. I mean, there's probably three or four people die there a year. Unfortunately, that's what happens. But these are people that really go on the edge of life for that thrill to go fast and be faster than anybody else. Every time I think of it, I think it's the greatest thing in the world.
Now, we're talking about Isle of Man. I'm just going to draw a comparison here. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to do this, but on the north-west side of Sicily was the Targa Florio back in the day. I don't know if they do anything to commemorate that race or anything like that, but have you ever had an opportunity to go down there and maybe rerun the circuit, so to speak?
I have not. No, I have not. No, that's something that I followed in magazines as a kid. But to see that, I mean, that's really kind of crazy. I mean, there's so many races in the world that you're putting your life on the line constantly. Look at the rally racing. Rally racing is unbelievable. These guys get in cars, and they're going down a little narrow path with trees on either side in a snowstorm, going as fast as they can with a navigator. I mean, this is some of the best racing in the world because they're putting their life right on the line and counting on that navigator to guide them through that. This is some of the best racing in the world, of course. But, I'm a big fan of every race, all racing. Formula One was one of my biggest, things that I had in my life. We traveled, my friend Tom and I traveled to so many races. We went to, of course, Watkins Glen, but I've been to Imola, I've been to the Grand Prix of France, I've been to England. I've been all over the world watching Formula One racing. Montreal, one of the greatest tracks. So there's been so much racing history in my life to watch, not to really participate, but to be a fan of. And motorcycle racing is one of those things. It's competition, and competition draws so much interest to people in all over the world.
You mentioned Mille Miglia, or how do I?
Mille Miglia. So it's Mille Miglia. So it's a 1,000-mile race through
right.
Italy. And, I So that was one of the focuses I really wanted to do for our show, Chasing Classic Cars. And so I bought a car, an Itala, not an Italia, but an Itala, in 1929, and one of the only two roadsters known to exist. I found it. I had to buy 18 cars to get that car. But that was my, you know, my venture. I wanted to make sure that I got that car. I entered it, and we went to put it in the container to bring it over to Italy, and the oil pump let go. And you can't just buy an oil pump for an Italia. I mean, it's just not any engine like that. So we scrapped out of that, and I ended up selling the car. But it's one of my ventures for my future, is to go on the Mille Miglia, the London to Brighton rally, and, of course, there are many other rallies across the world. I've been on a lot of the Colorado Grand. I just love that event. It's one of the most spectacular events in the world. But, you know, as I get older, I want to do different things other than Concours. I want to travel the world, and I want to see so many different things and participate in different events.
How about go ahead. Tell us a little bit about the Cala Grande and those driving tours. What are they like? I mean, what do you experience there?
The Colorado Grand, one of the most spectacular events, of course, like I just said. But I went with McKeel Haggerty in the Bow Car, his Bow Car. What a fabulous time that was! And then I got involved with this family from Texas. And they had so many great cars they brought every year, and we had so much fun. But the biggest part of the Colorado Grand is the elevation changes. So you're up in the mountains, and all of a sudden you look down 2,000 feet, and you see the open ranges out in front of you with the straightaways. So you come out of the mountains, and on that, there's different cars that perform differently. So you have cars that do 100 miles an hour, 130 miles an hour, and 75 miles an hour, and they travel in packs together. So this family, the Andrews family, Paul Andrews, would drive a 250 short wheelbase and a couple Aston Martins, and we'd drive together, and we'd be going 130 miles an hour, and we're up on the ridge, and we could see maybe 2 miles in front of us a group of cars, and it's like fishing. Sort of like you're reeling them in, you know. You're getting closer and closer, and it's a drive to make it go faster. And then you finally set them up for a pass. So you set back about a quarter of a mile, and all of a sudden you see this long straightaway coming up, and you pass them, and they're doing 75, and you're doing 130 miles an hour. That is the best feeling in the world, I think, you know, passing somebody at those speeds.
Incredible. Now, what is the route like? Tell us a little bit about the route, from where to where.
So we would go into Vail, Colorado, mm-hmm. and then we'd go out into Breckenridge, to Aspen, to all these different places all around Colorado. And a couple of times we moved every evening. We'd move to different hotels. Well, it's sort of gotten to be a hub and a spoke type of an event, where you go and you stay at one hotel and then you go out, you know, for the day. And it's basically 250 miles a day. So you go 125 miles before lunch and you come back 125 miles. So, you know, it's not overbearing like you're going 1,000 miles a day or anything, but it's a lot of fun. And it's for charity. So what you do is enter the event, and for the money you enter, they give it, a lot of it to charities, which is a lot of towns that you visit. So you visit different towns and you have lunch, let's say, in a town, and let's say the exchange club, the women's club, would come out and serve you lunch, and you gave the money that you normally would have lunch with, you gave it to their charity. There's one particular town where we basically, the Colorado Grand is paved Main Street. They had no money to pave the Main Street, and we paved it. We've put up clinics, you know, for health clinics in town. We've actually paid a lot of money for that. So you feel good about having a good time, that you're giving the money to do this to different charities, and that's the best feeling in the world.
That's super. That is really, really commendable.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, you know, since we're on travel, How about to the Far East? Have you ever done any ventures, venturing over into, you know, the car world in Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore, China, places like that?
I'd love to, but I've been invited so many times. But over the last 20 years of my life, I've been devoted to, you know, chasing classic cars and everything around it, and my business and my family and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think that I'd love to adventure out and do a lot more things, but we have the short list right now of going to Italy, to Villadesk, to do the Mille Miglia, and then, of course, London to Brighton, going back. We went on the London to Brighton rally probably it was about 10 years ago, and we didn't finish because the car just gave out 5 miles before the finish.
Oh.
But that I think, is one of the biggest things on the checklist, is to get that one off, do it, complete it, and then go on from there.
I remember you at one of the functions, you had a Bugatti, is it Persang, a replica?
Yeah, the Persang. What a great car. What a great car.
Well, do you know, I can't think of his last name, but Alan, he's out of Scottsdale, Arizona. He has a real 1913 Bugatti. I'm not sure which model he has exactly, but it seems
that's a very early car. I can't remember the name of it, but he was at an event, a Haggerty event, with that car.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful car. Yeah.
Well, I met him at Bonhams when we were in Scottsdale one time, and then he invited me over to his house, and it seemed like he had all these like pre-1910 cars, which was pretty amazing. Not to mention he had a very rare, not one, but two Pierce-era motorcycles, two 1913s. But he was telling me about the London to Brighton, and I think he ran it either with a Mitchell or he ran it with a Renault or something else that he had. And he was talking about that. And it's hard to fathom that you guys actually go and do this with these turn-of-the-century cars. But if you look at it, because we're looking at them going, oh, man, how reliable are these? But in reality, they were relatively reliable at the time. And then with today's technologies and a little bit of smartness, you know, it seems like you could refine them a little bit, so they do tend to be a little bit more reliable.
Well, you know, that's the key to the whole thing. It has to be looked at by the sanctioning body. You can't really do anything to the car. It has to be exactly as it left the factory. So it's a challenge. But that's what we like, is challenges. The Audrea Museum in Newport, Rhode Island, just did this. We were there 3 weeks ago. And it's 1908 and earlier cars. So I brought my 08 Baker Electric, and I brought my 1901 Oldsmobile. And it's a blast, because it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to just put the air conditioning on, turn the radio on, and drive 20 miles and have lunch and drive back. Will you make it? You know, how do you, we got caught 4 times, you know, out of fuel, overheating, all these things, and but we still made it. And that's what you live for, is that challenge, because you never know what's going to happen. If you get up in the morning and get in line with a bunch of cars that, you know, are going to make it every time, is, you know, okay, we'll have lunch and we'll come home, that's fun. But it's that challenge, it's that drive to make sure that you are going to make it. And if you don't, fix it on the side of the road and just make it happen. So that's what we live for.
Well, I think I saw there's a video on that. Was Donald your co-driver on that one?
No, Ralph Marano and Lowell Paddock and then Matt Strauss.
Oh, okay.
We had two cars, and that's what we're doing. But Donald, of course, the president of Audrean, he was on the tour too. But they put on a great event every year, and they're pushing it, I think, until 1912 cars next year, which will open up the field. I think I'm done pushing. So, you know, the 01 Oldsmobile doesn't go very fast. We were going up a hill, Ralph Marano and I, on the first year that we did it, and a jogger pulled up next to us and talked about the car with us and then passed us. And, you know, that's pretty bad when a jogger passes you. So. I think we're going to get a more powerful car next year.
Okay. Here's something. I don't know if anybody's really asked this question, but what was it like growing up in Connecticut, you know, with your dad around those classic and antique cars, and how much influence did that really have on you?
Well, it shaped my life.
Okay.
You know, my dad restored cars for a living when I was growing up. He was the founder of the Model E Restorers Club of America in 1951, the year I was born. and cars were our life. I mean, whether it was, you know, going to car shows, working on the cars, or finding them, you know, we take family Sunday drives, and all it was about really was finding cars. So my father would say, okay, you know, I had two sisters and myself, and he'd say, okay, everybody keep an eye out behind the houses we drive by, and if you see an old car in the garage, yell.
Huh.
You know? And so he bought quite a few cars that way, but that shaped my life in that I really, when I became a teenager, I really didn't want to do it anymore. I mean, you know, I've worked for my dad my whole life growing up, you know, since I was 8 years old. You know, I took a piece of sandpaper and started working for him. And I didn't want to do it when I went to college because I saw how hard he worked every day, 7 days a week. And so I went to school to become an architect and graduated actually as an art educator and couldn't find a job that I liked and went back to work for him. And here I am. So, but it's been good to me and I love what I do. And those are the two best things in the world, you know, as long as you able to make a living out of it and love what you do every day. There's nothing better than that.
Oh, well said, well said. Let me ask you this. So over the years, now, New England is relatively, you know, it's kind of like there's a lot of affluent areas there, and there's some very amazing and unusual cars that have kind of surfaced in the New England area. So over the years, when your dad was restoring cars, what are some of the most interesting cars and maybe even personalities that you guys came in contact with?
Well, there was, you know, New England was, like you said, very affluent. So we had New York City, we had Boston, we had Newport, Rhode Island, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, all the wealthy areas of the country where, of course, all the wealthy cars, I mean, all the high-end cars were situated. And so over the years, they were found here. I think some of the cars that my dad restored, he restored, I think, four Duesenbergs, you know, when I was a kid, lots of Packards, a McFarlane, lots of Packard Darrens, a four-door Darren, I remember. But he liked Model A Fords. That was his car because he couldn't afford to buy all those other cars, but yet he loved Model A Fords, and that's what got his start, was a Model A Ford. So, you know, New England, though, was a place where a lot of cars were stuffed into barns. And New York City, all the areas of the wealthy people, and they came out eventually, and they're still, I believe, there's still cars stuffed in barns. I find them every day, you know, whether it's a Chevy, you know, a 210 sedan, you know, stuffed in somebody's garage, a 442 I found today, 67 442, been in the garage for 40 years. There's things come out of barns and garages every day, so never give up. They're always going to be out there.
So for you, and I'm just curious because I know my answer. So is the hunt more exciting than the actual kill, so to speak?
Well, you know, our tagline for the TV show was it's all about the chase.
Okay.
It's all about the hunt.
Yeah.
Richie Klein always said, I don't know if you know Richie Klein, but one of my really great friends, Richie Klein, says, you know, it's all about, you know, the chase. When you finally catch the car, it just becomes another can of peas on the shelf.
And okay.
You move on and find something else. So, I mean, there's special cars in the world, but it's always about that experience of dealing with people, getting to know them, finding out the story about the car. It's not just buying the car. Anybody can go to the dealership and buy a car. It's about that interaction with people. And how you treat the people that have these cars and as part of their family, and you become part of their family, you know. So I bought a 51 Mercury recently, a custom car, and I was so happy to send an email to the family today to say that car is going to appear in Greenwich, Greenwich Concours, which was one of their uncles, and they sold me the car, but it was their uncle's dream that I buy the car. And they said, would you ever show it in one of your big shows across the country? And I said, I don't know. Well, I got asked to show it at the Greenwich Concours. And the family is just ecstatic that their uncle's car is going to be shown at one of the major shows that he wanted to show the car at, but never could quite do it. And I just showed a picture to Ken Gross, who's in charge of that category, that class, and he fell in love with the car, and he says, "Would you bring it?" So those are the good stories, those, you know, family-related and car-related stories. I bought this car after chasing it for 28 years, this Mercury. The guy showed it to me years ago, and I asked him to buy it, and I kept after it. And finally, when he passed away, he left a note for his brother to sell me the car.
Oh, wow. That's touching. And,
well, but that's how you do it. You know, if you're really interested in something and you love it as much as the person loves it, finally you get an opportunity sometimes.
Well, I know I had this discussion with Don because I do appraisals as well, and Don puts a premium on the story. I do too.
Oh, and that's what it's about. I mean, I'm writing a new book right now, Wankering My Life with Cars.
Oh, wow.
And you know, we may have to do two books because there's so many stories involved, and that's what it's about. It's about the story. If people say, well, what do you think of that? Well, I just bought a new Audi, for instance, RS6 Avant. It has no story yet. You know, but there still is a story, because that's the car that I bought because I want to do 200 miles an hour with four people in the car and a dog. It's a goofy thing, but it'll do it, and that's what I want to do. I want to go 200 miles an hour in a car with four of my friends.
There you go.
With the radio on and air conditioning.
Full power there. Wayne, we are up against the clock. If people want to find out more about you, what you're up to, and about your book and this upcoming deal with the new revised, improved Speed Vision, how do they do it?
WayneCarini.tv and Speed Vision dot, I think it's net. So, I mean, just look that stuff up. Speed Vision, you know, we've left Discovery Channel with Bob Scanlon, and I started with a few other guys, Speed Vision, which was the original TV network for car guys, mm-hmm. and it's back again. So we're on Roku, Fubo, Amazon Prime, Google TV, a lot of streaming services. Pay attention. New shows coming out, Carini's Garage, On the Road with Wayne Carini, a couple new shows, so... And just the podcast, Talking Classic Cars with Jay Ward.
Oh, really? With Jay Ward from Walt Disney, from the Disney guys.
Yes.
Pixar.
Yeah, Pixar Studios. Yeah.
Interesting. So Scanlon's involved with you again on the Bob is?
Scanlon is when Scanlon retired, when Motor Trend bought Speed Vision, Velocity, I said, "You're not giving up yet. I want to be part of what you're doing." So he called me about 3 years ago. He said, "How would you like to own Speed Vision with me?" So myself, I was one of the founding members, and several guys that retired from Discovery Channel, and Bob and myself own it now. And it's quite an adventure, you know, starting your own TV network.
Wow.
For cars. Yeah.
So you're going to need content. Keep me in mind.
We will. Absolutely. We'd love to have you.
All right. And don't forget, if somebody needs an appraisal, I'm your guy. But
thank you, Robert.
Wayne, I want to thank you very much for hanging out with us. All the best to you. Okay, sounds like you're doing really, really well, and you're finally kind of moving on. You know, it's next chapter in your life.
That's the best to you.
Super.
Thank you, Robert.
All right, take care. Hey, I want to thank my special guest, Wayne Carini, for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio Cars, hanging out with us in Nostalgic Radio Cars. In the meantime, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio Cars. This is our 14th anniversary, which was technically yesterday, so on May 13th, 2010, and today's 14th. So we are going into our 15th year. And we're not going to stop. We're going to keep on going. So tell your friends, tune in every Saturday. No, wait a minute, Tuesday, between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
Listen.